Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome, welcome. Renowned ecologist, writer, and activist Mark Beckoff says, we live in a wounded world that's in dire need of healing. He'll join us later this hour to discuss his new book, Rewilding Our Hearts, Building Pathways of Compassion and Coexistence. But first, it's interesting to me how many forms spirituality can take and how differently we interpret it, how differently we interpret what works for us. Last week, I talked with Frank Schaefer, an atheist who believes in God. Catchy book title, but the author was really referring to the fact that he's been through a long journey on his spiritual path. His father was, if you missed the show, his father was the voice of, he was really the voice that launched fundamentalism into right-wing government. And so Frank Schaefer was raised in an extreme conservative, patriarchal, evangelical home, and went through somewhat of a rebellious period as he got older and went on a long journey to find what works for him. He seriously questioned his beliefs until he found his own way. And today I'm talking with someone who has an entirely different point of view. She says, if we can imagine it, vision it, and restore ancient truths swept beneath the rug and kicked to the curb by patriarchy, then we can manifest it. Her new book provides solutions from visionaries, scholars, foremothers, and activists, women and men, who are dedicated to reshaping our world. And that book is called Voices of the Sacred Feminine, Conversations to Reshape Our World. And I'm, of course, talking about the Reverend Dr. Karen Tate. She's been driven for three decades by her passion for travel, comparative religions, ancient cultures, women's her story, as she calls it, and the resurging interest in the rise of the feminine consciousness. As an independent scholar, speaker, radio show host, and author, Karen's work combines feminism, spirituality, and uplifting women. Her work's been highlighted in the Los Angeles Times, Seattle Times, and other major newspapers, and she's a frequent media guest. Reverend Dr. Karen Tate, welcome. I should say welcome back.
Hi, Vicki. Thank you for having me back on the show. I appreciate it.
Well, I think this is the fourth time you've been back. I think this is your fourth book that we've talked about, Voices of the Sacred Feminine, Conversations to Reshape Our World. And I want to start with this, Karen, because I loved the book's opening quote from Arundhati Roy. Another world is not only possible. She is on her way. On a quiet day, I can hear her breathing. Why did you choose that as your opening?
Because I feel exactly as she feels. I feel like we are on the cusp of a paradigm shift. And I think we see it in the headlines, in so many different facets of life. There are those I interview and talk to, and I agree, who say that patriarchy is in its last gasps. And we hope it's true, because patriarchy has caused suffering and exploitation and discrimination for so many. And the new paradigm is going to be about the quality of life for the 99% instead of the 1%. And I think that is part of the ideals of the sacred feminine. It's about an egalitarian society. It's about caring and sharing. It's about partnership. It's about solving problems through partner, through negotiation, not always control and domination. And I think we look around the world and we see more people are trying to accomplish that. You know, we see what's happened in Ferguson. We see what's happened, with the police brutality. We see domestic violence is in the news and on college campuses and the NFL. I believe it's all over. I think as Hillary starts to run for president, we're really going to look sexism in the eye, as we've been looking racism in the eye. And I think we're going to make a better world.
Mm. Well, the book includes, I believe it was 41 interviews.
Yes.
Right. And you've divided it into five separate parts. So tell us a little about how this book has been put together, because you edited this book. You also contributed to it.
But you did
a lot of editing.
The book is a reflection of my radio show of the same name, Voices of the Sacred Feminine, because everyone who comes on my show, we all have a little piece of the puzzle, how we can replace patriarchy with a new set of values that makes the world better for most of us. You know, it's conversations to reshape the world. And I think what it really shows is what a big tent ideas of the sacred feminine are, because, you know, I've interviewed people from Noam Chomsky and Laura Flanders of Grit TV, you know, Gloria Felt, Planned Parenthood, Jean Shinoda Bolen, Vandana Shiva, you know, the list goes on and on. And, you know, many of these are actually in the book. The first part is it describes the sacred feminine as deity, archetype, and ideal. The second part talks about how embracing the sacred feminine, you know, through ritual and healing, you know, helps us empower ourselves. Part three is about sacred feminine values or alternatives to patriarchy. It's about politics and social change. Part four is sacred activism. And you know, then we had, you know, part five was in memory of Lane Redmond, who was a woman in the community who contributed so much to the arts, who had passed away, who I'd interview on the show. But, you know, we wanted to memorialize her in the book.
Right. And it's all about how we can achieve that goal, because you do put a call to action. I've noticed this with all of your books. You're not just shooting opinions out here. You're asking for call to action. You always have a proposed solution or pose some questions that you know, need answers.
True, you know, because we can talk about it and talk about it, and that's good, because we need dialogue. We need to raise awareness. We need to educate ourselves. But then once we do all of that, well, we have to get off the couch and, you know, not just vent all our frustration on Twitter or Facebook. Mm-hmm. You know, we actually have to get out there and do some things, you know, to make the world a better place for the most of us.
Yeah, I think often when I look at social media, how much time people spend on that, and if we put it to a different cause, you know, we could make some terrific changes in the world.
Agreed.
So I want to look at a couple of the chapters in the book, and one I'd like to address, because we've heard a lot about, you know, women helping women, but then we've also heard a lot about women being competitive amongst each other and maybe not being so helpful. And I thought this was an interesting chapter by Phyllis Chesler. She said, many have written about the dark side of female-to-female relationships. She said the book took her 20 years to research and write her book. It's called Woman's Inhumanity to Woman. And she writes that she met women whose relationships were fraught with mutual recrimination, competition, miscommunication, lethal envy. I mean, some of these may have been familial relationships. And she said that most women longed for more positive and redemptive relationships with women, but had yet to find them. Talk to us about that, if you would.
Well, I'm glad you chose that, because it is so important. You know, women are, I think, 52% of the population. If women could get it together, as the Dalai Lama said, you know, we will change the world, and I think we still will. But we do have to look at how women treat one another. And, you know, there are some that say women do this because patriarchy teaches us to be competitive rather than supportive. Part of what we teach in Goddess spirituality is that girls compete, women empower. And it's important that, you know, women do lift each other up instead of try to compete with one another or climb on each other's shoulders to get to the top. And Phyllis Chesler was very brave when she started that conversation, and she took a lot of flack for it.
Yes.
Because it's one of these things that maybe some women think she has betrayed her gender by discussing, but I think we have to have transparency, otherwise we don't realize there's a problem and start talking about how to solve it.
Yeah. Very good. And I thought, I didn't realize so much had been written about this until I was reading that chapter. And people had actually had advised her, don't write that. Don't write that story. Let's not just go there. All right, we're going to take a very quick break. My guest is Reverend Dr. Karen Tate, rejoining us, I think, for the fourth time today to talk about her new book. It's called Voices of the Sacred Feminine, Conversations to Reshape Our World. And you are listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Please do stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
Do you have a loved one who's exceptional in the kitchen or who simply loves to cook? This holiday, buy them a beautiful one-of-a-kind market bag or designer apron from Chantous Designs. Seattle designer Kathleen Callan's unique designs are handmade in America. Using the finest high-quality fabrics, whimsical, elegant, happy, and yummy designs that make heartfelt gifts for years to come. Find Chantous Designs exclusively at Pike Place Market. Check Kathleen's Pike Place dates and times at chantousdesigns.com.
Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair kicks off 2015 with Alan Carle and his three-year quest around the world for culture, cuisine, and connection, and more than a little adventure. Join us Monday, January 5th for a vicarious journey around the globe and hear Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair every Monday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern, or find the podcast at conversationslive.net.
If you'd like to advertise your business or service on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, or you'd like to become a program supporter by sponsoring one of our shows, please call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine a spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772 or email info@conversationslive.net. Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicky St. Clair.
Independent programs, independent voices, independent ideas. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, and I am talking in this segment with Reverend Dr. Karen Tate. Her new voice, Voices of the Sacred Feminine, Conversations to Reshape Our World. And this is a series of essays, 41 essays that Karen edited and actually contributed to and put into a book here. So Karen, I wanted to look at another chapter in the book. This one is called The Queen, Empowering Model for Midlife Women. And the big question there, of course, in a woman's midlife is, who are we supposed to be when we're less likely to be bound by an identified by our kinship connection to someone else, as a daughter, as a mother, as a wife, a lover? Mm-hmm. So talk to us a little bit about that.
Well, you know, there within goddess spirituality, for a while there was this saying that there were three phases of a woman's life: maiden, mother, crone. You know, everybody in patriarchy, everybody loves the nubile sex kitten maiden, you know, the fun-loving, carefree girl, you know, just exploring her sexuality. You know, then there's the giving mother. You know, she gives birth, she takes care of her family, she gives and gives and gives without much thought to herself. Then they sort of skip over to crone, as if once a woman has done her mothering, there's nothing left. She's just
right.
The old crone, while, you know, we sort of think of the crone as the wise woman, that leaves a lot out of potential for woman, because once she has lived through her maiden and lived through the mother, she's got so much potential there that she has stored up. She's maybe started a business, she's raised a family, she's, you know, done so much that, well, now it's the time when she really, I think, steps into her power. And, you know, and she becomes sort of sovereign of her realm, and she looks after everyone in her care, whether it be her employees or her family, or, you know, maybe she's, you know, a leader in a community. And that's when I think she really takes all of her life experience, all of her intuition, and she can channel it into making the world a better place.
Right.
That's the role of the queen. It's to, not the patriarchal views that we have of queen, you know, because it's usually, some sort of nasty female figure with a negative connotation, you know, like the queen and, Sleeping Beauty or
mm-hmm,
something,
mm-hmm.
You know, the queens, you know, powerful women get negative stereotypes under patriarchy because patriarchy would rather women be benign and passive. But the queen is not. You know, she steps up into her power and she, you know, she can change the world.
Yeah. I think it's a great opportunity for rebirth. In fact, I just watched a documentary on Netflix called Advanced Style, where a photographer follows women around New York of a certain age. They have to be over 50-something. And he photographs their style. And there was a 93-year-old woman on there that he followed for a while. And she said, I have just, over the last couple of years, come into my own. 93 years old. She's just started painting. She's just started singing as a performance artist. And get this, she makes her own eyelashes from her own hair, her own false eyelashes. She was awesome. So I want to ask you, Karen, before we run out of time, what is your favorite story in the book? Do you
well,
have
you
one?
Well, you know, it's hard to say what my favorite is, but I think one of the most important is chapter 25 by Rhianne Eisler. Rhianne Eisler is a mentor of mine. Because of her, I found goddess spirituality. I started to understand the importance of the ideals of the sacred feminine to make the world a better place. It was through her I learned about the dominator versus partnership society. And, you know, we live in this sort of we live in this dominator pyramid where a few at the top are pulling all the strings, and we're just sort of the cogs in the wheel down at the bottom. And that's the dominator pyramid. But what she talks about is how we have to start adopting partnership in everything we do so that we're not oppressed, so that we're not dominated, so that we're not exploited. We want to create a world where there's partnership between employers and employees so they're not exploited, where there's a partnership between the genders, an egalitarian society, so women aren't continue to be marginalized or subservient to men or make less money for the same job. We want to create partnership between humanity and Mother Earth, between corporations, between countries, because when we understand that we have to create win-win situations rather than winners and losers, then everybody benefits. You know, it's like that saying, you know, we want to lift up all boats. And that's what partnership is about. And her particular chapter is about the essence of good business, companies that care. And she talks about the benefit companies reap when they treat their employees well.
Right. So you have, you said in the beginning that we all have a little piece of the puzzle. What did you learn about yourself and the way you look at your work as you were editing this work, this book of work?
Well, I learned how important it is for women to speak up, for women to become engaged. You know, so many women, you know, I don't say this to be negative. I just, you know, it's a statement of fact. So many women are complicit in their own oppression. You know, I come from the South, the Bible Belt, where women don't learn about this stuff necessarily. They don't even understand it sometimes how they're exploited, how they're oppressed, how they're marginalized. It's just normal. And I think one of the important things is to wake up the women. I think there's an expression out there, when women wake up, mountains will move. And I get goosebumps saying it, actually, because I think that's one of the most important things we can do. And, you know, that's become my mission, to not just wake up women, but we have so many male allies out there, too, who want world for all of us. You know, they aren't right. concerned with, you know, being the dominator in charge anymore. They really want partnership as well. They want to be, live an authentic life and be who they want to be and not have to fit in this box that patriarchy has made for all of us to live in.
Mm. There's a story in the book called The Little Goddess, Equality Through Love. What do we want to be telling our daughters, our nieces, our grandchildren?
Well, I think when it comes down to it, the goddess is about love. The goddess is about caring and sharing and nurturing. It's about valuing our intuition. It's about valuing the sacredness of life and the planet and all of us on it. And, you know, that is really a wonderful little essay by Dr. James Rietveld. You know, he tells the story of this little girl who's having a conversation with her dad just before bed. And this, you know, the wisdom of youth, you know, she has this conversation with dad, and by the end of the conversation, she's making dad understand that, you know, God is also in the feminine, is female. You know, God is just not that, you know, guy with the beard up in the sky. You know, that God is, you know, God is goddess and God is love. And it's an old cliche, but it is so true. It's this idea of caring about one another, looking out for our neighbor, not this dominator, survival of the fittest type attitude, you know, of greed and exploitation, you know, that has causes so much suffering in the world. It's really the love, the caring, the sharing, the partnership. That's what's going to make things change. You know, that's what we have to hold dear. And those are the values that we want to teach our children.
Yeah. Well, the book is 41 stories, 41 interviews. I mean, covers so many topics in here, from specific goddesses. You talk about specific goddesses, to feminine spirituality as an antidote to terrorism, to women in politics, positions of power, the mysteries of the female orgasm, even.
Yes, yes, absolutely. We have to reclaim the sacredness of our body and, you know, the pleasure of our body, and, you know, that shouldn't be shameful and taboo.
Yeah. So what do you hope people will, in your call for action, what are you looking for here, Karen?
Well, I think I'm looking for people to first of all, open up their minds and understand that the way we have been living isn't the way we have to continue to live, that what was once normal has been turned on its head, and you know, we do have alternatives to what we're doing now, and that we have to do it together. We can't continue the way the world has been going, because it's not sustainable for the planet. It's not sustainable for humanity. I mean, we have more income disparity now than we ever have, or at least for you know, a really long time, and you know, it all has to change. And I want to try to motivate people and give them hope, so that they realize things can change. There are alternatives, and we do have some of the answers. They just have to educate themselves, get up off the couch, I think what's really important is to reconcile their spirituality with their politics, and not support institutions or politicians who don't represent their ideas, you know, for a better future. And, you know, we have to be the change. Again, that old cliche, but we have to just understand that nothing is going to change unless we demand it.
Right. And a final note, because I do want to point this out, you have many men have contributed to this book, too.
Oh, absolutely. You know, that is a fallacy that's out there, that this idea of sacred feminine ideals is only, you know, in the minds of angry lesbian women who hate men. I mean, that's crazy.
Right.
You know, I mean, we have incredible men in this book. In fact, half the book is men. And, you know, they're in there talking about women should be priests and, you know, all of these different things, you know, Charles Eisenstein is talking about money. Art Noble is talking about the female orgasm and how important it is to love women. I mean, the men are really right there, standing shoulder to shoulder with us.
Right. Well, Reverend Dr. Karen Tate, always a pleasure talking with you. I'm just always amazed at how eloquent you are, but I know you've been doing this for a very long time, for 30 plus years. And let's very quickly, we're almost out of time, just tell people where they can find out more about you and the sacred tours that you also put on.
Oh, thank you so much. Probably the easiest thing to do is go to my website, which is my name, Karen Tate, KarenTate.com. Once you're there, you can find information about my radio show on Wednesday nights on Blog Talk, Voices of the Sacred Feminine. You can find out about my books, my lectures, my presentations, other interviews I've done. And most importantly, I have a wonderful tour coming up in May with Dr. Rietveld, who's also a contributor to the book. He's the one that did the one about the love and the little goddess
right,
that we talked
right,
about briefly.
Right.
He's probably the foremost authority on Artemis of Ephesus, American authority on Artemis of Ephesus, and we're going to be leading a tour for 16 days to Turkey in May. It's going to be a trip of a lifetime. Anyway, you can find out about that on my website, too.
Okay, you can find out all about that at KarenTate.com. I guess, of course, Reverend Dr. Karen Tate, the book, again, Voices of the Sacred Feminine, Conversations to Reshape Our World. Karen, thanks so much. And please stay tuned, everyone. We will be right back with Mark Beckoff, and we're going to talk about rewilding our hearts. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
Let's see if I guess that this just isn't working.
Knowing you have a great idea for a book is one thing, writing it another. So what's stopping you? Maybe you can't find time. Maybe you don't know where to begin. Maybe you wrote a couple of chapters, then disappeared down a rabbit hole. Or maybe you'd rather someone else write it for you. Partnering with the right coach or ghostwriter can make all the difference between talking about your book and finishing your book. As an award-winning writer and strategic consultant, Vicki St. Clair's storytelling credits span from business, health, self-help, and memoir to New York Times and USA Today best-selling anthologies. Vicki partners with people just like you, at the exact level you need, whether you need a little encouragement, editorial guidance, or full-blown ghostwriting and consulting services. If you're serious about telling the story you know is inside you, stop procrastinating. Let's get your story down on paper. Contact Vicki today. Email Vicki at VickiSt.Clair.com or call 1-800-495-7617. See more about Vicki and her work at VickiSt.Clair.com.
Oh, yeah, that could work.
Looking for unconditional love, an exercise buddy, or a great listener? Paws has the dog or cat of your dreams, just waiting to meet you. We've made thousands of perfect matches since 1967, because everyone needs a warm, safe place to call home. Find out more today at paws.org or call 425-787-2500.
Do you have a loved one who's exceptional in the kitchen or who simply loves to cook? This holiday, buy them a beautiful one-of-a-kind market bag or designer apron from Shantou's Designs. Seattle designer Kathleen Callan's unique designs are handmade in America, using the finest high-quality fabrics, whimsical, elegant, happy, and yummy designs that make heartfelt gifts for years to come. Find Shantou's Designs exclusively at Pike Place Market. Check Kathleen's Pike Place dates and times at shantousdesigns.com.
If you'd like to advertise your business or service on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, or you'd like to become a program supporter by sponsoring one of our shows, please call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine a spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772 or email info@conversationslive.net. Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Listen to podcasts of past shows at conversationslive.net.
There's nothing else like it on the dial. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everyone. Welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, and my guest in this segment is Mark Beckhoff. He's the professor emeritus of ecology and evolutionary biology at the University of Colorado Boulder. He's the co-founder with Jane Goodall of Ethologists for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, a fellow of the Animal Behavior Society, and a former Guggenheim Fellow. He lectures internationally on animal behavior, cognitive ethology, and behavioral ecology. There's a lot of ologies in there. And he writes a science column about animal emotion for Psychology Today. He's written and edited over 23 books, including The Emotional Lives of Animals. And his latest is Rewilding Our Hearts, Building Pathways of Compassion and Coexistence. Mark Beckhoff, welcome.
Thank you, Vicki. It's great to be on your show. Thank you for having me.
Well, you've been doing some amazing work. In 2000, you earned the Exemplar Award from the Animal Behavior Society for your longstanding contributions to the field of animal behavior. How did you choose this as a career path, Mark?
Well, when I was 3 years old, my folks said I began asking them what other animals were thinking and feeling, and persisted on that through childhood and, you know, forever. So in a sense, I think I was kind of born into caring about animals, you know, also caring about humans, to be honest with you, and their homes. So, I think it was just something that I was destined to do, to be honest with you.
It sounds like it. I was almost going to ask you, did it choose you? Because that's what it sounded like when I was doing some research on your work. So let's talk about the latest book. In wildlife conservation, you say rewilding refers to restoring habitats and creating corridors between preserved lands to allow declining populations to rebound. In this book, rewilding applies to human attitudes. So talk to us a little bit about Rewilding Our Hearts and why you wanted to write this book.
Yeah, I wanted to kind of spread my agenda into certainly humans. And, you know, a lot of what I've written about in the past has been on animal emotions, animal cognition, the moral lives of animals. And so that's, you know, all wrapped up into a lot of the arguments in the book. But I really wanted to write a book that would involve, like, a personal transformation, something that would really get people to think about who they are and how they could make the world a better place for other animals. And so that's what got me going on it. And then, you know, I started thinking over the years about how we're all, if you will, unwilded, and how we really need to undo the unwilding, which, you know, is basically rewilding.
Right.
And so that's basically how I came to it.
So how did we become unwild in the first place?
Well, I think we've become unwild in a whole lot of different ways. And, you know, one for sure is how education works. You know, we go to school, or, you know, sort of the global we sit inside. The first kind of activities that are usually stopped are those that are are related to kids going outside and, you know, engaging in spontaneous play, taking hikes, and, you know, just getting out into nature.
Right.
We also unwild due to media, and I think, you know, honestly, this is something that I know that you don't engage in, but a lot of media engages in talking about when people behave badly or violently. They say, oh, they're behaving like animals, ignoring the fact that, of course, you know, animals are predominantly peaceful. Sure, they fight with one another, and sure, they sometimes harm and kill one another, but more than 90% of the behavior of these animals is positive or pro-social. And the other thing I really wanted to do was to make sure that people working in conservation biology and environmental ethics, who are wonderful people with laudable goals, realize that animals, non-human animals, are part of the landscape.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about how you get people to care, Mark, because I've talked with people many times. We've done a lot of shows on conservation. We've had some of National Geographic conservationists out here talking about how many of the animals that we love, like cheetahs and the big cats, are becoming extinct. And I've talked with people who say, well, you know, I don't really care because it doesn't really affect me.
Yeah.
So in your work, how are you trying to get people how are you trying to change that perspective with people?
Well, there's a number of ways, and that's one of the sort of $64,000 questions. The first is, of course, it does affect them. I mean, there's so much research in the field of conservation psychology and even in just plain old psychology that shows that a lot of how we feel about ourselves and other humans is related to how we feel about other nature, including landscapes and, you know, other animals. It affects us also is when we lose habitats and we lose species. We lose a lot of richness in the world. And once again, it affects us in terms, you know, in an aesthetic way. It affects us when we lose places where we can just go outdoors. And it's something that's insidious in the sense, you know, I often think of Rachel Carson's book, Silent Spring. People didn't miss the sounds of the birds until they weren't here anymore.
Right, right, right.
And that's, to me, it's a very powerful analogy. It also affects us, you know, in terms of how we interact with other humans, because there are some, you know, studies that show that, you know, when people feel good about themselves, we feel good about and treat other humans, you know, better.
Yes.
And we're part of nature. We're not apart from nature. We're not above nature. And, you know, I also tell them that I'm tired of hearing that the world is infinitely resilient. I like to say the earth is very tired. And the rubber band, in some ways, has been stretched as far as it can go without snapping.
Right. You say rewilding connects us with wildness, not just the outdoors. And you say, I always like to keep in mind what Kathleen Dean Moore, a philosophy professor at Oregon State University, reminds us. There's a difference between the call of the outdoors and the call of the wild. Talk to us about that, if you would.
Well, yeah, I mean, a lot of... when I go outdoors, and if I'm in New York City, one way I, quote, rewild or keep the wild going is watch squirrels in Central Park. So that would be going into the outdoors. That's the call of the outdoors. It could be sitting on your porch. It could be taking a walk and, you know, admiring a tree or a plant or a dog you meet or a bird or a butterfly. The call of the wild, I think, really is more primal, and it's this call that really wants us to go out into, you know, if you will, whatever wildness we can.
Right.
You know, the most, you know, the, I mean, it depends, of course, where you live once again, but there's this phenomenon called biophilia, which, you know, basically argues that humans have an innate, inherited, genetic, if you want, you know, you can call it any of those things, attachment to nature.
Yes.
And so, once again, going out into the wild versus just outdoors is really responding to our genetic nature, our DNA, you know, it's sort of, if you will, DNA driven.
Yeah.
So they're very different, and they can, You know, they can affect us in different ways. But once again, I think the big thing about my agenda for rewilding is that it's also personal. So a person living in New York City may be affected more positively than I would be by something I wouldn't call wild, but it's not important what I call wild. Rewilding is this personal, internal transformation. And so I don't think going to Central Park is particularly wild for me, but if you live in New York City, it's a touch of wildness.
Right.
I hope that makes sense.
It does. It does. Yeah. Yes, it does. So we're going to take a very quick break. When we come back, we'll continue talking with Mark Beckoff. His book is called Rewilding Our Hearts, Building Pathways of Compassion and Coexistence. And when we come back, Mark, I want to talk about the 8 P's of rewilding. You are listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Please do stay tuned. We will be right back.
At numbers I have dialed, I hear the call of the wild.
Do you have a loved one who's exceptional in the kitchen or who simply loves to cook? This holiday, buy them a beautiful one-of-a-kind market bag or designer apron from Shantou's Designs. Seattle designer Kathleen Callan's unique designs are handmade in America. Using the finest high-quality fabrics, whimsical, elegant, happy, and yummy designs that make heartfelt gifts for years to come. Find Shantou's Designs exclusively at Pike Place Market. Check Kathleen's Pike Place dates and times at shantousdesigns.com.
They seem like such a perfect couple. There must be some other explanation.
Why doesn't she just leave?
I don't understand why she puts up with him.
It takes two to argue.
It's not my place to interfere.
If someone you know is a victim of intimate partner abuse, you can give them back their voice.
Call 1-800-799-SAFE or go to thehotline.org.
Let your voice be heard.
This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to Burlingame Veterinary Consulting, we cover the world of animals. This week, December 28th, it's an encore presentation and a chance to enjoy our winter solstice and Christmas show again. Hear harmonic energy shifters Jude and Paul Ponton from Whispering Dragon work remotely with listeners and their animal friends using their Acutonics forks, Tibetan bowls, puas, and bells. But resist the urge to call in because it's pre-recorded. Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair kicks off 2015 with Alan Carl and his 3-year quest around the world for culture, cuisine, and connection, and more than a little adventure. Join us Monday, January 5th for a vicarious journey around the globe and hear Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair every Monday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern, or find the podcast at conversationslive.net.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Join us live every Monday at noon on Alternative Talk 1150 or stream live from conversationslive.net.
Don't forget, this is Alternative Talk 1150 AM.
The days linger on, standing in silence, time lasts so long.
And welcome back, everyone. Welcome back. We are talking with Mark Beckoff in this segment. His book is called Rewilding Our Hearts, Building Pathways of Compassion and Coexistence. And as I said in Mark's introduction, he's done some amazing work around animal behavior. He's Professor Emeritus of Ecology and Evolutionary Biology at the University of Colorado Boulder. He's also the co-founder with Jane Goodall of a couple of societies. So lots of really great experience here. And we're talking about rewilding, which I just love, the thought of rewilding our hearts. But I want to talk right now, Mark, about the 8 P's.
And in fact, since I wrote the book, because I always look at books as works in progress, I've added 2 of them. So the 8 P's of rewilding, I view it as a social movement. I view it as what we call a meme. It would be a tradition or attitudes that spread from person to person, you know, non-genetically. And the 8 P's would be the 8 P's would be being proactive, not having the putting out the fire mentality, because that clearly is not working. Being positive, being persistent, patient, peaceful, practical, powerful, and passionate, And the two that I've added since are being playful, so that we, at some point, we laugh at ourselves, we take ourselves lightly, we don't take ourselves too seriously, so that we don't burn out. And the last is being present. And so really, when you combine them, the argument is we should, you know, concentrate on what works, not what doesn't work, the positive aspects.
Right.
Be persistent, patient, and peaceful, and practical. I mean, just really don't give up. But don't expect a gold star on your head at the end of the day. It may not come at the end of your life. Be peaceful. Be nice to people with whom you disagree. There's nothing to be gained by being nasty. And at some point, we might just have to say, we might agree to disagree. Because I'd rather work with a group of people who are at least open to the possibility of change rather than somebody who is incorrigible and just basically wastes my time.
Right. You mentioned playful as being one of those P's. And I'm glad you mentioned that because I read in your book, we talk a lot about free range chickens, free range hen laying, etc. You say you'd like to see our kids be free range. Talk to us about that a little.
Yeah. Right. I'd like to see free-ranging kids be more playful spontaneously. When I came home from school years ago, you know, I didn't have soccer at 4, violin at 5, you know, chess at 6. I mean, seriously, I came home, had my milk and cookies, and said to my mom, I'll see you before dark. I went out and played with the kids in the neighborhood. You know, generally it was the same group. Sometimes it was someone new. I learned to play spontaneously, creatively, simply, you know, stickball, a broom stick and a tennis ball. And through social play, I learned to resolve conflict. And that's one of the things that we really are lacking, is that ability for kids to just get down and dirty. And I mention the slogan for an organization called Play Wales. It's a big organization in Wales. And their slogan is, better a broken bone than a broken spirit.
Yes.
And that captures, for me, everything in the sense of, you know, I came home scratched up. My mother didn't think of suing the school.
Yes.
I came, you know, I mean, seriously, because one of the things after I wrote some of my books on play and, you know, what we can learn from non-human animal play that we can apply to humans, I was talking with school counselors, guidance counselors, and teachers. I do kids group work with Jane Goodall's Roots and Shoots groups. And I've had teachers say, well, what can we learn from other animals? How can we get kids to have, you know, play more spontaneously? And one way, of course, is don't load them up with sitting, you know, inside all day. And accepting the fact that, you know, they may get a scratch every now and again, but that's part of being a kid.
Yeah, well, actually, we were, in my school, we were made to go out during recess, as they call it here, even if it was raining, so it didn't do any of us any harm.
Oh, right. No, exactly. But I think, you know that was, when I say years ago, I'm not making any guesses about your age, but this is really something relatively new,
mm-hmm.
You know, that the first thing that goes in a day, if teachers run out of time, the first thing that goes really is free play, recess.
Right, right.
They'll say, well, we don't have time to just play. And I'm thinking, oh, my goodness gracious, really what you shouldn't have time to do is all this stuff and computers and indoors. And I'm not, as I point out in the book, you know, I'm not disparaging the whole thing. I'm just, you know, basically saying that we really should, you know, pay attention to what it means to be a kid.
Yeah. You say it's important to remember the four rules, I guess, if you will, of ecology that are central to rewilding, which are what? Everything is connected to everything else. Everything must go somewhere. Nature knows best, and there's no such thing as a free lunch.
Yeah. Right. I mean, and you know, I mean, I call them rules. And, you know, once again, I think that, you know, we can have these general rules and, you know, and things like that. But really, once again, it's the tailoring. I mean, like kids in Boulder, when I ride my bike through town, I'll see them out a lot. I'll see them walking along the bike path because we can do it. So, you know, kids in the city, it may involve, you know, going to a local park. It may involve getting interested in, you know, what's happening around them. I did a program with Jane Goodall's Roots and Shoots Group a bunch of years ago in Denver, Colorado, and there the local kids were really interested in rats and rat ecology, if you will. And they were really serious about it because there was garbage all around, and there were rats. So I had them observing rats.
There you go. It's part of our world. It's part of our world. And you have to take what you know, I grew up in a big city, but we were lucky enough to live by a green belt. And I'll tell you this, to this day, this is really weird. Nobody believes me until I do it. But I can be in a room, and if there's an English television program on, I can tell you by the sound of the birds without even knowing, without hearing an accent or anything. The sound of the birds are so different.
Yeah.
And it always makes me a little homesick. But I think nature is such a wonderful place to be, and all of the animals in it make it that way.
Right, and also, you know, part of the rewilding, too, is landscapes, because every now and again, you know, somebody, and it's fine, you know, somebody says, well, I'm not really into animals, and I'll say, well, are you into going outside? Yes. Well, if you protect landscapes and habitats, you know, sort of de facto, you're protecting animals. It's all tied together. You don't need to be a millionaire and found an organization. You don't have to make huge monetary contributions. You can help your neighbor. You can take a walk. You can, you know, work at the local humane society. I mean, there's so many things. And, you know, the bottom line is that rewilding is really simple.
Well, let's tell our listeners where they can find out more about you and the work you're doing, Mark.
Yeah, the best place to go would be my homepage, which is just markbekoff.com, markbekoff.com.
And the book is called Rewilding Our Hearts, Building Pathways of Compassion and Coexistence. Mark Bekoff, thank you for being with us today. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you, Vicki.
Well, I want to just say before we leave today, I hope all of you enjoy happy holidays here. I want to say a big thank you to Eric and for all of this year. Because when we come back, it will be a new year. It will be 2015.
Yes, indeed.
So let's close out this on a happy note and a good note. And I hope you enjoy your happy holidays.
Thank you. Happy holidays to everybody.
Yeah. And all of you out there, enjoy, enjoy, enjoy. Don't stress it. Just do something really nice for yourself, something really simple. Get out into nature and enjoy. And if you have any comments or questions on today's show, you can find me at 800-495-7617, 800-495-7617. And you can also reach me at info@conversationslive.net and via Facebook at Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair and at Twitter at Vicki St. Clair. And I do appreciate every single one of you joining us and being with us. And we will be back in the new year. We'll have a show for you next week, but we'll be back in the new year, all live, sitting right here in the studio. So enjoy, be safe, be safe, live well, live strong.
Hi, this is Vicki St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.
If you love dogs, tune in to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes live every Wednesday from 2 to 3 p.m. We'll talk about everything dog and interview authors, experts, and amazing organizations, both locally and nationally. And don't even get me started on the pet food industry. I'm Julie Forbes. Find us online at www.dogradioshow.com and also as a free podcast on iTunes. The Dog Show with Julie Forbes, an evolved perspective on life with dogs.
Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair kicks off 2015 with Alan Carl and his three-year quest around the world for culture, cuisine, and connection, and more than a little adventure. Join us Monday, January 5th for a vicarious journey around the globe and hear Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair every Monday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern, or find the podcast at conversationslive.net.